Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Table Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
This evening's first storyteller is Steve Belden, a.k.a. the Cold Plunge Guy. This is his fifth year in Kodiak. He has lived in Alaska since 1978, and in November of 2020, he came to Kodiak, and he said to his wife, "Why would we ever go back to Anchorage?" And so here they are. Please welcome Steve.
Thank you, Ellen. How y'all doing tonight? Well, I don't know. I don't remember if you said this is my third time doing this in the last 4 years. And I really didn't want to have to do it this year, but they were shorthanded, and so I volunteered. And I tried. I tried to get somebody else, and I had three possibilities, and all three of them backed out. So what I was going to do was I was going to offer the mic. I was just going to say, but apparently no. But that means I got 14 minutes, right? No, nobody wants... Nobody wants to hear me for 14 minutes. And I'm going to try really hard. I'm not used to using a mic, so I'm going to try really hard to keep it up here. If I do the mic wall thing and drop it down here like that, just yell at me. All right, so quick update real quick. Heather introduced me as the cold plunge guy. So my first talk 2 years ago was about the polar plunge that we do every Saturday. Rain or shine, regardless of the weather, regardless of the wind, we go down to Gibson Cove, about 10 to 20 of us, and we go jump in the water for 10 minutes. It's a lot of fun. I promise. It is a life-changing experience. And I expect to see all y'all there tomorrow morning. 9 a.m. Gibson Cove. All right, last year I talked about getting a free boat. And we all know what getting a free boat means. And I ended the talk, I said, so the only problem, I don't have a motor. So I'm looking for, if anybody's got one, I'm looking for a 90 horse, power tilt and trim, in decent condition for no more than about, say, $50. And I actually found one. Now, it was a little more than $50, and it had a problem. It came with a boat. So then I had two boats. Two trailers, and then another free boat appeared, and another, and last year, just a few months ago, I had five free boats, and I gave away three of them, but that left me with a trailer, and then I gave the trailer away, and now I'm just down to two boats. One of them's for sale, if you'd want it. Let me know afterward. Great little boat, man. It's fantastic. And let's see. So that's one boat. And just the other day, don't tell my wife, but I was offered two more free boats. So she doesn't know about that, so don't say anything. Okay, so back in my day, I've been worrying about this for the last week. What am I going to say? There's so much, right? There's so much. And the first thing that every one of us thinks whenever we think about back in the day is, man, things were so much better back in my day. Man, I grew up in the 70s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and things were awesome, and we thought they were never going to end. The music, the really tight high shorts and the knee-high socks that the girls wore, oh, man, it was fantastic. We had Watergate. I mean, we had. It was so much fun, you know. We just had a great time. And really, the music, we really did think, this is never going to end, right? But, of course, it always does. And then the next generation comes along, and you're like, ugh, they're so stupid. And that music, what is that music that they're listening to? My God, that's ghastly. And a thought occurred to me. I was remembering, how much time do I got, by the way? I only got 3 minutes left? Holy cats. All right. I was thinking about how we've been saying this, our ancestors have been saying this for millennia, how awful the next generation is. And I looked up some quotes, and it's from like 500 BC. It was like Hippocrates or Plato or somebody was talking about, oh, this younger generation, they're just awful. Their music, it's terrible. And they wear their tunics way too tight. And they cross their legs when they sit down. Oh, man, it was just horrible. And we've been saying this forever. But the fact of the matter is, in a lot of ways, things were better. I was thinking about how, and by the way, I really wanted to hear stories from back in the day of Kodiak. That was what I was trying to recruit for. I don't really want to hear my own stuff. I want to hear about Kodiak, right? Seriously? Okay. I was just up at the chart room, man, and looking at those pictures of the 64 quake and realizing, man, you know what? The people that were in charge back then, they'd gone through the Depression. They'd gone through World War II. They were adults, and they knew what they were doing. And I really do wonder, what are we going to do? I really do wonder, you know? Anyway, I was just going to leave you with, seriously, man, I didn't realize I had that little time. I was going to tell you just one story about back in my day when I did hard time. I did hard time. Okay, so I was a theater major in college, and I had a very sheltered childhood growing up. Theater nerd, first generation D&D player, ooh. And so I didn't know anything about anything, and I'm an actor. I want to be an actor, right? So we were doing a tour of a play in spring break, and one of the stops was we went out to Highland Mountain Correctional and did the play for the inmates. Well, before you go out there, they have to do a background check on you, right? So you submit your name and your driver's license. They do a background check. Happy, happy, joy, joy. We all got in there. We do the play. The inmates are a fantastic audience, man. We were doing like a French farce from the 1700s, about as far away from Highland Mountain as you can get, and they loved it. Anyway, we get to the end, and the warden calls me and Donnie Lee into his office. And I remember him. He wasn't like this at all. I remember him as this old Southern sheriff kicking back in his chair and saying, well, boys, you two have warrants out for your arrest. And so I called the troopers, and they'll be here in about 20 minutes. Now, you got a choice. You can either stay here, be arrested, or you can turn yourselves in on Monday. And I looked over at Donnie, and it was like, man, I've never been arrested before. I've never gotten to do this before. I need this. I need this experience, you know? So the trooper comes, and he's like 5'7", little tiny guy. I remember him very distinctly. And he hears our story, and he's like, what? You want? So anyway, he handcuffs Donnie, puts him in the back seat, puts me in the front seat. And I'm like, what's this? What's that? Oh, can you turn the lights on? And he's like, don't touch anything. And no, we're not turning the lights on, you idiot. So he takes us down to the old 6th Avenue jail back in the day and puts us in there. And back then, they let you keep your cigarettes. And so Donnie and I are chain smoking in the holding cell and talking tough and, you know, repeating lines from prison movies from back in the day. And about 20 minutes later, Donnie's roommate comes and bails him out. And I'm waiting for my dad to show up and bail me out. And he doesn't come. And he doesn't come. 2 hours later, my dad shows up and he bails me out. He's like, Stephen, just so, I can't even. Anyway, that was my entire experience of being arrested. I've never, ever, again, it's so sad, really, because, again, as an actor, you know, I really do need to experience more of life. So, anyway, that's all I got. And once again, the mic is open. We got one slot left. So think about it. Marilyn, you should come up here and talk. Yeah.
Our next storyteller is Mark Stigler. Mark is visiting from Palmer, where he's lived for the past 30... Mark? Mike? Oh, Mike. I was like, I think his name's Mark. where he's lived for the past 33 years. He's in Kodiak as a volunteer instructor for search and rescue, one of his greatest passions. His guiding motto is, "Don't regret tomorrow what you did today." Since he's here teaching search and rescue, Mark thought it fitting to share the story of his very first rescue back in 1986, a mission that ended well and with a little bit of humor. Let's welcome Mark.
Well, hey, thank you, everyone. I thought back in my day when I was still flying, I thought I would tell you the story of my first rescue. And like I tell a lot of my classes, I get the opportunity to teach at the Trooper Academy, is that, many times we're guided by a guiding hand to where we find and bring home whoever it is. And that day, I was guided. And so to give you some background, in those days, 1986, I was a National Guard helicopter pilot, and we had received a call to fly. I was flying out of Reno to fly to the south end of Lake Tahoe and look for two missing geologists who had disappeared the day before. So this was, February in the Sierras, and I'm thinking, geologists, well, okay, there's 20 feet of snow. So off we go. I'm in the second helicopter, and we're flying along. It's about a 20-minute flight down there. And I got this thought in my head of, hey, why don't you go fly through this valley? It's a pretty valley. Just take a flight through that. And so I radioed the helicopter in front of us, and I said, hey, I'm going to swing into this valley, and we'll meet you where we're supposed to land and get our full briefing. And so as we're flying through this beautiful Sierra Valley, as we come down towards the end of it, I look off to the end, and here is this huge bonfire. And standing next to the bonfire, this is a Saturday morning, about 8 o'clock, are two guys keeping warm, and out from them in kind of some scattered trees where we couldn't land was a giant red X made with red survey tape. And so now, as the young rescue pilot, I'm going, this is kind of different. And I look over 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and I said, well, these guys are getting a good early start going, where's their camp? There were no tents. There was no other equipment. It was just two guys standing around a giant bonfire. So I broke into a circle and started circling around it, thinking, hey, if these guys are the guys, they'll come out and stand in their giant red X, And so anyway, we're circling, and what are they doing? They're looking at us, keeping warm. And it was like, that is weird, So we circled a couple of times, and we thought, well, maybe it isn't, And so we headed off to get our full briefing. So as we're flying there, I thought, this is really weird. Why would somebody be without equipment standing around 8 o'clock a Saturday morning, miles from everywhere, and have a giant red X out in the middle of the trees, okay? So we come in and we land, and I send my crew chief in. I said, hey, tell the sheriff's department, I think we may have found him, but we've got to do some more investigation. So while he's running and doing that, I come up with the idea, well, hey, I'll write a note, and then we'll drop it to him, okay? So I'm there scribbling a note that says, we're looking for two missing geologists. If you're in need of assistance, go stand out in the center of your red X. And then I asked the crew chief when he came back, I said, hey, can you get something we can weight this thing and kind of drop it to him? So he disappears and he comes back. He says, hey, sir, the only thing I could find was a beer can. So I said, well, hey, that'll have to do. So I rolled up the note, and we kind of stuck it in the opening, in my day with their beer cans, they had been opened with a opener. So I stuck it down in there, and off we go. We fly back, and we circle around, and my crew chief opens up the door, throws it down, and one of the guys comes out to the center of the red X, picks up the note, opens it up, and we're just flying around watching him. Looks at it, and then walks back to the fire. And I said, So decided, well, we'll go back and we'll go get our full mission brief because maybe this isn't them. So as we're heading back, we started following their tracks through the snow. There was some fresh snow. And son of a gun, about a half mile later, we see a snow machine turned on its side in a big ravine. And just a little bit further than that is another snow machine turned on its side in the same ravine. I said, it's got to be them. It's got to be. So we fly back. The other helicopter had a rescue hoist. The crew chief told them the story. We fired them both up, and off we go back to check on these guys. So a guy goes down the rescue hoist, and sure enough, we rescue hoist both of these guys into the helicopter. And you can imagine what I'm thinking the whole time as I'm circling out there. And so anyway, we head back, and we land. They get out and go into the base to do their debrief and talk to the sheriff's department. And I asked my co-pilot, hey, get out and go see what the deal was, and then also see if they have anything else. So anyway, as he disappears, I'm thinking, they didn't want to get in the helicopter with us because we threw a note at them in a beer can, did they? Maybe that was what it was. So anyway, my co-pilot comes back, shaking his head, climbs in, plugs in. I said, so what was the deal with those guys? And he said, hey, they were hydrologists, not geologists. And he ended up writing an article, and it was published in my day, which was called Reader's Digest. So...
All right, our next storyteller, I'm going to put on I don't do a Russian accent very well, so just bear with me. We're going to call this storyteller Comrade Nova 451. 15 years ago, she escaped on a yellow submarine from the sinking Soviet Atlantis and resurfaced in St. Paul Harbor. By day, she time travels through history at Kodiak High. By night, she shapeshifts into various mythical creatures, most often the waterborne kind. Her favorite motto, borrowed from a Russian painkiller of choice, is, while suffering, you perfect your soul. She tells this story because she remembers a world that sank overnight and says this one feels strangely familiar. Let's welcome Comrade Nova 451.
Can I help you with anything? While she's setting up, I just wanted to relay a quick story. So my third polar plunge was Christmas of 21, and I invited Daria down to go do it. She was my neighbor. Comrade Nova, sorry. I invited her down there, and she shows up in a hot pink wetsuit and swims out to the rock, which is about 400 yards out, and swims back. Meanwhile, the rest of us do our five-minute plunge, and we're standing around this bonfire on the beach, freezing our asses off, and she comes back, and I'm and she looks across the fire and she says, say to yourself, I am warm. And I said, how do you say that in Russian? And she said, we don't have to.
You ask too many questions. You should just keep plunging without talking too much. Okay, so just forgive me, guys. This is my emotional support octopus. Escaping from Atlantis. Okay, and this is my safety buoy. Okay. I usually tell funny stories. I love to make you laugh, but I'm not sure this is a funny story, but it's a truthful story. Okay? So it comes from a girl who was born on an Atlantis. And now let me get a little bit into my teacher's mode and ask you guys, what day is it today? Marilyn? What day is it today? Well, it's October 25th by a Julian calendar. And very few of you know that 107 years ago, that's when the Soviet Atlantis set sail, that changed world history and our history here too. Some of you had an 8-hour day work. Well, thanks to Atlantis. Well, so I was born half an hour away from where it all unfolded in the Winter Palace. And I got to work before I actually started working. I don't remember anything because all the pictures of the day back in the day were black and white, and we didn't have that many pictures. So my memories are scarce. But what I remember that at the age of 5, my dad had a big party, and he invited all of his guests. That was some kind of jubilee. And they were so proud of me. I was a single child. So they called me in and put me on a table and asked me to recite a poem. I was really good at that. So I kind of got lost for a second, and then I started looking for a portrait of Vladimir Lenin, that was the chief Bolshevik who started the whole revolution. And there was no portrait of Lenin in our house, but there was a portrait of my dad. It was a portrait of my dad. I looked at the portrait side and said, Lenin lived, Lenin live, Lenin will live. And then continued on. Everybody grew silent, like New York growing silent. That's how the guests grew silent. My parents got silent. They actually felt really embarrassed. I didn't understand what was going on. And I don't remember who taught me to say that, but somebody did. The next thing I remember, going upstairs to an apartment where two babushki lived, two old grandmas, and seeing there very strange contraption. In their corner, there was some candles, and there were some strange pictures, and there was smoke coming out of some candles. So I looked at that. I've never seen anything like that before. So I and sometimes they babysat me. So I looked and said, Babushka Natasha, what is that? She said, this is God. I looked at her and said, that is not God, that's just a picture. She said, oh yes, this is God. I said, there is no God. She looked at me in horror. I remember her horror because that's how it was one of my first memories. I don't remember who taught me that. It was not my parents, but somebody did. It must have been the kindergarten. You're not laughing. It's not a funny story. My parents decided that I was talking too much and I was asking too many questions. So it was safe to make me do something where I was not allowed to talk. Guess what it was? It was chess. You're not allowed to talk while you're playing. Well, I don't know why they decided. Well, I'm sure that it's a conspiracy. They wanted me to not talk. That's what the whole purpose of that was. As I learned, when you play for 6 hours a day and you're not allowed to talk, but guess what? You're allowed to think. And your thoughts are deep. Because it's only 64 black and white squares, and you have to think, and you see it as a metaphor of life. The only one who prevented me from thinking that deep was my coach, because he kept saying, Dasha, you need to learn how to hate. That's the only way to win. I think, I'm trying, coach, I'm trying. He said, you're too soft. You've got to learn how to hate. This continued for 10 years. I was so tired of hating. Then eventually, but I kept reading at the same time. Actually, my favorite thing to do was to play with a globe. It was the most colorful thing I had in my life because otherwise we all had to wear black and brown and dark blue, and it was not colorful at all. So I really admired my dad, but he never talked politics to me, neither did my mom. I guess they were afraid that I would start talking, right? So they learned their lesson. Don't talk to her, otherwise she will tell others what they really think. So we never talked. We talked about something, but we never talked about the most important things. But my dad always told me, you are what books you read. So one day, and guess what happened? When they were at work, I decided to rummage in my dad's bookshelf. Guess what I found? I found Archipelago Gulag by Solzhenitsyn. That book made my world collapse. I didn't care. I quit playing chess. I realized that I lived in an illusion. But the scariest thing of all was I couldn't talk about it to anybody. So what was happening, that Atlantis was sinking, and eventually it sank to the point that people just started floating up and getting scattered all over the world. But I also remember one of my last memories before it sank quietly overnight, listening to Beatles. One of my friends smuggled Beatles to me. Beatles were prohibited as well. And listening to that, and then I'm singing about Yellow Submarine, and that's how I learned English. I wanted to understand, and thinking, I want to be on a Yellow Submarine. I want to be somewhere around the globe, because I've never been anywhere outside of where I was born. And so it happened that 15 years ago, I washed ashore in St. Paul's Harbor. And I kept teaching, and I don't wear red mask anymore. I don't stare at the board and think deeply, and I talk a lot. And I hope that maybe my story will make you think that a person who wears too many colors sometimes, maybe once wore no colors, and maybe the person who talks a lot, maybe at some point didn't talk at all. Right. Thank you.
That was beautiful. Okay.
Thanks, Daria. That was a beautiful story. Our final storyteller before the intermission is Joseph DiBello. Joseph DiBello, known to many as JD, is a new member of the Kodiak community, having moved here this summer. He makes his living through a mix of creativity and craftsmanship, doing electrical work, designing high-quality surfboards, and providing healthy, delicious food product. When he's not working, JD can be found surfing, mountain biking, hunting, fishing, or exploring what it means to understand the love of God. Welcome, JD.
I don't do this, so I don't speak, so this is probably, it's pretty hard for me, so this is my first time to ever do something like this, so. The only thing I got going for me is I'm going to tell you a true story. So, this is about some children growing up in a suburb in Texas somewhere. And we played a lot of football, okay? And we really liked football, but sometimes we got bored. So the title of this story could be Boredom and Inspiration, or I prefer to call the title 10 Banana Splits. Okay, so... One summer morning, we got bored, and we just wanted to do something besides play army or football or all the stuff that we do, and I noticed it was windy, especially up high. The clouds were just really moving, so I thought, I had some ideas that I'd been thinking about previously, and things started to come together, so I said, got my brother and his friend over, and I said, "How much money we got? See how much money we got." Okay, that's a good amount. Listen, I want you guys to go down to the hobby store. I want you to buy the best kite you can buy, like the strongest, most durable kite possible. Okay, you're gonna tell us what this is? Just go get the kite. And so they come back with this. I was impressed. It was back in my day, they could make some stuff. It ain't like no China kite, okay? And so I was like, holy crud, man, the whole thing. We're like, wow, this thing, you could probably stinking fly. Wow, this is amazing. So we put the kite all together. And I looked at Ronnie and his dad. I don't know what he did for a living, but I can remember this. In his garage, this thing of string. I've never seen this industrial roll of string. It was like, I'd never seen anything like it. I go, Ron, you got to go get your dad's string out of the garage. He's like, okay. And he goes, gets the string. And I'm like, all right. You guys probably not old enough to remember this, but back in the day when Jack in the Box first hit the scene, they tried to really hit with a splash, and they were giving out these balloons. I don't know what you had to do to get one of these balloons, spend so much money or something, I don't know. But they had these balloons that looked like these things look like those things in a hospital that you put, like, ice in, like, I don't know. These things were industrial balloons. Had a neck, jeez. So I had a big red one of these balloons, and I was saving it because I just felt like, God, this thing's special. I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I'm going to neck, jeez. So I had a big red one of these balloons, and I was saving it because I just felt like, God, this thing's special. I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I'm going to figure out something someday. And I'm thinking of all these things. And so we get the kite going, we got the string, and some people are like coming, some kids are coming by and going, what are you guys doing anyway? And I'm like, listen, we're going to do something special today. Go get your friends, get everybody you know, and come on out here. We're going to do something special. And so kids start showing up, and then I tell those kids to go get, and pretty soon we have the whole neighborhood. I don't even know how many kids in our front lawn. And I go, okay, here's what we're going to do. Anybody got a really good parachute man? And this one little kid goes, I got a really good parachute man. I go get it. If you don't mind donating. He goes, oh, yeah, no, I'll go get it. And he's gone, and then I go, anybody got the core of a toilet paper roll, the cardboard? I'm like, well, we're just about out. I'll go get ours. And so somebody, and I go, anybody got any of that nylon strapping tape, that really strong? Oh, yeah, we got some of that. Go get that. And a scissors, okay? So then things start coming together, and I get out my balloon, and the kid comes back with the really good parachute man, and I open up to throw that balloon. I go, can you get it in there? And we somehow get the parachute guy in there, and I blow this thing up, not just a little bit. I blow it up tight, and like it's going to pop tight, and the thing's huge, and the parachute man is in there, and I tie the knot, and I have somebody hold that, and I go, give me that toilet paper roll. And you know how you could unspiral those things? Well, we start flying this kite, by the way. I kind of skipped that part. Sorry, so the kite is like, we didn't even have to like do any of those things that you have to do to get a kite going. The wind was just perfect. I mean, you just throw it up there, and and then it hit that upper layer where it was really windy, and that roll of string was just, whoo, and we're like having a hard time seeing this thing before very long. And so kids are going, and they're running back home and getting binoculars. We got like 6 or 8 pairs of binoculars. One kid goes, and he gets a stinking telescope, and he's got a tripod sitting in there with a telescope, and this thing's going way up there. And I go, give me that toilet paper roll, and I get the toilet paper roll, and I unravel it, and then I put it on the string, and then I take the strap and tape, and I start to reinforce it, and I get the balloon, and I stick the knot up in the crack, and I get the balloon on there, and I tape it all up really, really good, and the balloon's on there. And then I go, okay, anybody got any BB guns or pellet guns? And about half the kids go, yeah! I'm like, go get your BB guns and pellet guns, because back in the day, we had stuff like that. Kids played outside, and they actually did stuff. Yeah, we had some dirt clod fights. Oh, yeah, we had some stuff going on. But these kids went and got their BB guns because back then you could have those. And, no way, it's already done? 7 minutes?
Keep going, man.
Okay, so I got to finish this story. I'm sorry. So they go get their BB guns. I go, anybody got, like, checkered flags? No, but I got a really cool sword. All right, go get your sword. And so then we get the BB gun guys all lined up, and I go, I'm going to let go of this balloon, and nobody is going to fire until the guy with the sword comes down, and I tell the guy with the sword. So they're like, okay. And they're all jazzed because they get the, you know, and I let that balloon go, and it starts to go up the string, and it gets, the further it goes up, the faster it starts going. And I mean, it's, I want it to get as high as I can get it to go, but I don't want it to be out of range. So I'm like kind of trying to calculate, and I pop, that's why I blew it up so tight so it could pop real easy. And then I go, okay, ready, go. And the guy pulls down the sword, and pretty soon, oh yeah, I forgot to mention, these kids, they come with Stingray bikes because back in the day, yeah, that's what we all had. We all had Stingray bikes. So there's like dozens of Stingray bikes all laying everywhere. And I go, and I'd already talked, I kind of keep skipping certain parts. This is, I already talked to my neighbor because his dad owns the name of this neighborhood was Sherwood Oaks, by the way, the Sherwood Oaks Grill, which happened to have the best soda fountain, the best ice cream, and I'm talking about sundaes and banana splits. And I used to do trades with this guy, and it was like he would pay me back with banana splits. And so I talked him into, I go, we got to have some kind of prize today, okay? We got to give some kind of prize. I'm talking 10 banana splits. And he would do these, like when you have to come by when he's working there, when his parents aren't there, and you could, he would make deals, and he would give you, like, free ice cream. So the prize was 10 banana splits from the Sherwood Grill, which is saying something. So I told the kids on the bikes, the kids are, I go, whoever brings back this parachute man is getting 10 banana splits. And I mean, they popped the balloon, and the parachute man guy went, and it was high enough that the winds caught it, and it really started to go. And the guy with the sword got ready, and all everybody was on their bikes, and it was, and a brigade of bikes go tearing out of there. And as time went on, a couple of bikes would start trickling back, and the kids that couldn't keep up would come back and be like, give, you know, tell the story, like, okay, they're, you can't believe it, but they're here now, and they're doing this, you know. And then a little bit later, some more kids would come back and be, yeah, I just couldn't hang with those guys. Some of those guys are animals, and they're clean out over here. I'm like, wow, okay. And then a whole group of them come back. And I go, what's up? Well, you're not going to believe this, but that parachute man went across railroad tracks. I'm like, really? Yeah, and it's going across the freeway. And my mom won't let me ride my bike across them, across the railroad tracks, and definitely not across the freeway. So then, long story short, right, yeah. The parachute man gets stuck up in a tree, a huge tree. And there's, by this time, there's only like about 6 or 8 of these guys left. And they're all sitting there, and they're sitting underneath this tree going, oh, my gosh, who's brave enough to climb out there and get that parachute man? And I think about half of them tried, and finally this one kid risks everything. And this guy goes out there, and he manages to get the parachute man. And those kids come back. This is late in the, this is like, it's, this is very late in the day by this time. This thing went on all day. And they came back with the prize. And that young man got 10 free banana splits.
So our next storyteller is Nick Sabo. Did I say that right? Thank you. Ow, ow! Nick was born in Childersburg, Alabama. Yeehaw. Oh, yeah, Jenna Beth back there, Alabama fan. Yep. Nick worked in Anchorage for the Anchorage Times and came to Kodiak to cover the Crab Fest in 1966. He moved to Kodiak right after that, and he became a fisherman, and he's called Kodiak home ever since. And please welcome Nick.
Well, thank you very much, Tandy. I turned 82 last month, so I've got I've got lots of back-in-my-day stories. But lucky for you, I'm limited to 7 minutes, so I'll... I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, and when I go back to visit my sister occasionally, I always get the question from my schoolmates, why do you live in Kodiak, Alaska? Well, we all know why we live here, but I try to explain to them just why we do live here. For one thing, you don't have to plan your day around the traffic. You can be anywhere you want within 10 days. Within 10 minutes. Within 10 minutes, you can be anywhere you want. And that includes our national treasure, Abercrombie Park. There is no place on earth that has so many diverse trails. From a wheelchair to a backcountry climber, you can find a trail to suit your wishes there. Safety. I don't do the bar crawl much anymore, but you can be anywhere in Kodiak from 2 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon and feel safe. And the people. I think we ought to give a hand to these people who put on this function because it's a really great... That's what keeps us here in Kodiak. I wanted to touch on some things about my life in the 40s and 50s. Believe it or not, we had no computers, no cell phones, no internet, no social media, no personal phones. We did have a telephone, though. It was a single landline. Does anybody know what a party line is? It's not who you call to find out who's having the best Halloween party in town. It's two or three households sharing the same telephone line. And it gets really, if you have a lot of teenagers on the other line, it's almost impossible because you pick up the phone and somebody else is talking. And you're supposed to be polite and hang up, but then you never know who might be listening to your phone call on the other party line. We had a radio, but it wasn't a small desktop radio. It was about the size of a small refrigerator. It was about 4 feet high and about 3 feet wide and about 2 feet deep. And it looked like a giant piece of furniture, had a big grill, and... When you turned it on, you had to wait about 5 minutes for it to warm up because it had all those big vacuum tubes in it. I remember when I first learned about the radio. I was about first grade, I think. And just a second. No, just a second. Okay. Yeah, texting, right. Okay, so I was riding the school bus, and a friend of mine said, "Hey, did you tune into that program I told you about?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I forgot." He says, "It's a really great program." I said, "What's the name of it?" He said, "Well, see if you can guess." Can anybody guess what the program was? The Lone Ranger. So, I try to shut the thing off now. Can you shut it off? So, anyway, I tuned in. He said at 7:30, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at 600 on the dial. And the old AM radios, they weren't quite as sharp as the FM were. But I remember tuning in about 25 minutes after, and then
For a while, there was a silent, crackly silence, and then came the Lone Ranger. I was hooked from then on. Every time I had a chance, I would be listening to the radio. There was Lone Ranger, of course, Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, Superman, Gene Autry, Roy Rogers. The radio was a family gathering place, and instead of watching TV or looking at your cell phone, the whole family would gather around the big radio, like on Sundays, and listen to Jack Benny and Amos and Andy and Fibber McGee and Molly and so forth. Anyway, that's my time of way back when. So, thank you.
All right, our next storyteller, who has signed up last minute, gave me this intro, would you believe it or not, just on the fly. All right, Philip Battles is a lost cowboy from Texas, traveling the seas from state to state and coast to coast. The local seafood, salmon, crab, etc., is what brought him to Kodiak. The changing fall season is when Philip changes locations. As a sailor hoists his sail, the wind blows him to whatever direction calls him next. Please welcome Philip.
I said, I'm driving down a dirt road, ice cold beer in the console. If you know it, sing it. Memory lanes up in the headlights got me reminiscing about a good time. All right, now, I said, I'm driving down a dirt road, ice cold beer in the console. Memory lanes up in the headlights got me reminiscing about a good time. All right, now, all right. You know what? Can I be honest with y'all about something? My blood pressure a little high now. I done been all around the world, and only a few things really make me nervous. Just a few, you feel me? The police, which y'all don't have a lot of. The IRS, which I think y'all know how to hide from. And adolescent white girls without their parents. I'm having a mild pressure right now. You feel me? I'm trying to get used to the environment up here. Because back in my day, where I used to live, I'm from the South, y'all. Jim Crow had this strong hand on me. I'm Boy Scout, but all my Scout friends, they were the same color. I say, we played tennis, but my tennis stars was Zena Garrison and Lori McNeil. But back in my day, I say, I was driving down a dirt road, ice cold beer in the console. Memory lanes up in the headlights got reminiscing about a good time. All right. Now, that's all I got to say, because back in my day, it was easy for me to get around. I just got on the bus, and I just kept on pushing. Now that I'm up here in Alaska, you got to get on the float plane to go see your neighbor. I say, I was driving down a dirt road, ice cold beer in a console. Memory lanes up in the headlights got me reminiscing about a good time. Now, back in my day, I mean, my mother, you know, she from the South. We like fried catfish. Now, I thought that was a delicacy. You can only get that on Friday and Easter Sunday. Y'all know about me, Good Fridays. I done got up here to Alaska. Y'all got salmon by the 100 ways. Y'all got y'all own version of Bubba. We got smoked salmon. We got skewed salmon. We got sushi salmon. We got all that sauteed salmon. I say, I was driving down a dirt road, ice cold beer in the console. Memory lanes up in the headlights got me reminiscing on the good time. Y'all sing along with me when we get it now. back in my day, it was just some things that I just understood. When the holidays came around, we ate sweet potato pie and pecan pie. But now that I'm up here in Alaska, they got me thinking about apple pie with sharp cheddar cheese. Is that a thing? I say I was driving down a dirt road, ice cold beer in the I want to say thank y'all for sharing this moment with me. Y'all got my pressure right. I can go sit in the corner and drink my cold water. If y'all have any questions, I want to say thank you. Have a lovely night, Heather. Thank you for letting me do this. Big shout out to the Co-op and the Artists Coalition. Y'all give it up to them.
Our next storyteller is Hannah Wolf McPike. Hannah has lived in Kodiak for 3 years, but was born and raised in Sitka. Along the way, she's also called Maine and New Mexico home. She works as the collections manager at the Kodiak History Museum and is a proud new dog parent to Lou. While she doesn't claim to have a personal motto, she does have an enduring obsession with history and learning about people. A natural storyteller, Hannah loves both sharing her own stories and helping others tell theirs, making Galley Tables the perfect place for her. Welcome, Hannah.
Well, that's a tough act to follow. On the topic of reminiscing, so as my intro said, I am a recent new parent to a new dog mom. But I've had dogs in the past, of course, but these are family dogs. This is my first solo dog, my first solo pet parenting of a dog. Anyway, I was walking her a couple of weeks ago, and it reminded me of this kind of tradition, weekly, daily tradition. One of the ways when I was younger, from like middle school to high school, I would get to spend more time with my best friend was by walking our dogs together. My mom, if we were grounded, if we were parents were upset, they would still let us go for dog walks because it was one more, the dog was getting more exercise getting out. So even if I got in the most amount of trouble, I still could go get a dog walk with my best friend. Anyway, I was thought about this one specific time we went on our dog walk. I can remember the time, all of our dog walks were always at 7:45 every single day for probably 5 years. Anyway, it was the middle of like the school season, and so we had actually lost one of my dog on our dog walk, or I thought we had lost our dog on our dog walk. Needless to say, so we go for a dog walk. Both of my best friend and I, we were not great at math. We sucked at math, and so we go and get our dogs walked, and then we go back to her place. And so while we're at her place, of course, I still have my dog. She has her dog. We're getting into it under some of our homework. And I'm like, Mom, we're going to be late. I'm going to be late coming home. I got to work through this math problem with my friend Rachel here. So we're getting into it. We're getting it. We finally got our problems figured out. I'm getting ready to go. I had completely forgotten that I had brought my dog with me. And that was the whole main reason we were hanging out was because of walking our dogs. And so I start walking home. I get in through the front door, and I'm like, my mom's like, where's George? And I was like, wait, oh no, where did the dog go? And I was like, oh no, we lost him. So we go back, I go back to her place, and I'm just like, is George here? Have you seen George? And there, she's like, no, we haven't seen George. And we're like, I'm like, oh, no, he got out. I'm like, he got out. He's out doing something. And then we go through and we retrace back our steps, trying to find my dog. There were some other people in my best friend's house. There was her brother, her dad, and her mom. My best friend Rachel's house had a really nice butler's pantry, unlike any other butler's pantry or even our pantry back at home. I should also mention that Rachel's parents loved making Cobb salads. That includes bacon bits. And this is the time where we start actually getting Costco-sized items into Sitka and stuff like that, because we had a whole Costco section in our grocery store. And one of those Costco-sized things that you could get was the 2-gallon bag thing of bacon bits. Now, Rachel's brother loved walking around the house eating bacon bits as his favorite snack. And somewhere in between us taking care of the dog, of us trying to take care of our math homework and stuff like that and getting completely distracted with that, George had managed to follow her brother Joseph around the house as he was eating bacon bits. And I'm pretty sure her brother was a bit of a messy kid too, so I'm pretty sure he had like these lovely little crumbs of bacon bits that he was just following everywhere. George loved bacon. Anyway, George follows Joseph all around the house, more than likely. And then Joseph was like, it was time for Joseph to go to bed. And so Joseph goes into the butler's pantry, puts the bacon in there. And of course, George had never been in a butler's pantry before and understood the sheer Shangri-La of being in a whole room full of food with no doors whatsoever. And so George was, of course, in hog heaven in this butler's pantry. And he was a black dog. And so all the lights were off because her parents were like, oh, everybody was really great at staying at night. And so the lights were off. And so George, being a black dog, blended into the entire surroundings of this butler's pantry. And they shut the butler's pantry door. And I am just panicked around the entire town. I'm like calling my mother. We're just like sheer panic, looking for everything. Rachel's dad had been out downstairs in their garage. He comes back up, and he, of course, wants a snack, and I'm pretty sure it was bacon bits. Anyway, he opens up the door, and there's George, just in hog heaven, just, like, trying to, like, not figure out what he's going to eat next or what he's going to try to get into. And so he opens the door, and he's like, hey, George, how's it going? And, like, my friend Rachel and I come running in, and we're just like, oh, my gosh, where's George? Where's George? Where's George? Rachel's parent mom is now in on trying to figure out where George is, and he's like, we're all just panicked. I go back home, and I'm like, oh, gosh, we're going to totally have to call animal control and the police department and stuff like that. Next thing I know, I get a call. Hannah, we found George. And I was just like, oh, my God, where is he? Needless to say, and then my friend Rachel was just like, oh, he followed Joseph into the butler's pantry and got locked in. Just completely in Shangri-La. There was all kinds of other food and good stuff like in there, but that was the time I nearly lost my dog, George, on our dog walk.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller. Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life.